live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go, Tuesday, Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. James is here, steering the ship. Adam Candy will be along in a little bit. Good guest load today. Lots to get into, more college football, more NFL, lots more Raiders. And we do have the NBA Cup in town, so we'll preview the Knicks and the Spurs in just a little bit. Some World Cup information coming in on ticket prices, so for folks in Vegas who want to go down to L.A. or fly out to somewhere like Seattle, good luck. Good luck. So that's all on the way here on a Tuesday edition of Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Good news in yesterday as UNLV got the news. I might hold off another, couple of days on this just to officially make it official, but we can talk about at least what Anthony Calandria told the media, UNLV football quarterback who had a great season this year. That's a guy who came over from Virginia. At Virginia, he was a pretty decent level recruit out of Florida. I don't know what to call Tampa and Orlando, if it's Central Florida or South Florida. But he's a guy who started out at Virginia, got to play early on, put a couple of years in there. Things didn't work out. He went into the portal. Listen, much of what happens in college football now comes down to the quarterback. Sound any different than the NFL? Well, if you're in the NFL and you don't have a franchise quarterback or someone who's at least top half of the league, there's a good chance you're not going to be good. As a coach, there's a good chance you ain't going to last more than 2 or 3 years. We've seen coaches who have looked ordinary without a quarterback. With a good quarterback, all of a sudden they take off. I want to use, although now they've had a season that's kind of gone down the tubes to a certain extent, but Todd Bowles would be a good example. In New York with the Jets, the quarterback position was all over the place. It's stabilized in Tampa, and they've been a pretty good organization. Means Todd Bowles is a good coach now, right? Because he's got Baker Mayfield. Well, the same thing goes in college. There are a bunch of college coaches who are either on the hot seat for next year or were dumped this year, in large part because they chose the wrong quarterback. Quarterback's such a vital position. And then there's the flip side. Like, Clark Lee, I think, was building something decent at Vanderbilt. Clark Lee without Diego Pavia might be fired right now. That's how much of a difference Diego Pavia made. I know up on social, Nevada Sportsnet does a really good job of covering the Reno football scene. You know, Pavia was actually committed to transfer from New Mexico State to Nevada. What would Nevada look like right now? I don't know if they'd be a 10-win program, but I bet you they wouldn't be a 2-win program if Pavia had stuck it out, if Vandy hadn't come in and offered him money. That's how big the quarterback is, and we've seen it around the country. At Auburn, Hugh Freeze, pick the wrong guy. Jackson Arnold, ain't it. Florida State, they haven't really gotten it right yet, and Mike Norvell is on death's doorstep, it seems like, every year. And here in Vegas, they've gotten it right in back-to-back years. Now, last year, they brought in two quarterbacks, one being Haj Malik Williams, and the other was Matt Sluka. Sluka didn't work out. He imploded, and Haj Malik led him to a bowl game and got him to 11 wins without Odom at the very end of the year. And this year, Mullen picked two quarterbacks. Alex Orgie got to the field but got hurt. Anthony Calandria won the job late in the spring, cemented it in the fall, and he turned out to be a really good player. And Calandria told Fox 5 yesterday at media availability that he's not interested in going back to the portal. He's done with that. He's going to stay around. It looks like Jet Thomas is going to stay around. So that those are really good. If that's, again, the portal opens on January 2nd. It closes on January 16th. Anything can happen. But right now the news is that UNLV will have its quarterback back and its running back returning. And that's really, really good news for the program because it's going to be a different looking Mountain West Conference. If you look around the league, Calandre is one of the best quarterbacks, if not the best quarterbacks, best quarterback in the new Mountain West Conference, because you also have to take into consideration hometown hero, Micah Alejado, who is from Gorman, is at Hawaii, just went through his redshirt freshman year, had an outstanding year, did not have a good game against UNLV. Watch, that's going to be a good rivalry for the next few years here, but that's the beginning of good news for UNLV football, as the portal will open up on January 2nd. It will close on January 16th. To this point, to my knowledge, no one has gone into the portal. It's, why would they, right? UNLV has a bowl game. I guess there could be some guys who haven't played all year and are on the outside looking in and even playing in the bowl game. They could go into the portal now if they wanted, but as we speak, no one has gone in. And if you look around the Mountain West that has existed, there are a bunch of programs that lost some really good players, including two of the best receivers in the conference, two of the first-team All-Mountain West Conference receivers are already in the portal. So the portal is such a big thing. Retaining your quarterback for a second year is freaking massive. Calandre certainly can have some big offers out there. It doesn't look like he's going to be courting any of them. Doesn't mean people aren't going to call him. I would assume this is a message to everyone out there. Don't call me. So it looks like he is in the fold with UNLV, along with Jet Thomas, for another year. Quick timeout. Want to get to some A's baseball, get to a setup of the NBA Cup. Adam Candy's going to join us. Also, Mike Davis is on the way from Fox 5 and Silver State Sports and Entertainment Network.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Rolling on a Tuesday. Adam Candy is in. Let's talk a little baseball. Also set up NBA Cup. Knicks Spurs, 5:30 tip. We'll head to it right here on ESPN Las Vegas. Mike Davis is going to be out there covering it. He covers everything locally, including his expertise on baseball now and the A's, with the A's entering the market. And Mike, of course, from Fox 5 and Silver State Sports and Entertainment Network. Long time no speak, my friend. How are you?
I know. I miss you. I miss Steve Cofield in my life.
There you go. All right. Well, schedule's opened up a little bit. I saw you had an interesting trio talking UNLV football the other day. So we'll get into that in a couple minutes. But, you know, I want to lean on you, Mike, before we get to NBA Cup, on A's coverage and what to expect this year and your A's knowledge. What are we looking for this year from Fox 5 with the A's?
So last year we launched this show called Covering the Bases with the A's. It was pretty much a very in-depth, all-inclusive A's show, a studio show. Myself, Kevin Bollinger, Mike Allen, Mariah Janos, we did a little bit of reporting. We had experts and reporters with the team join us on a weekly basis. We had one-on-one interviews with players, coaches, all that kind of stuff. So it was super duper in-depth, and it really just set a nice baseline, a foundation for Las Vegas and getting to understand the major players on this roster. And I think the biggest thing to note is that the young talent on this team is so exciting, it's actually striking. Yeah, I mean, having a rookie of the year in Nick Kurtz, who gives you that juice that we used to grow up loving with baseball, Mark McGwire, like the power, the presence at the plate. I mean, it's like the good old days of baseball. So having, you know, that guy on the team playing first, having Jacob Wilson, who could have been rookie of the year, the draft pick the year prior, having this young core, Langoliers, all these guys, we just wanted to introduce the local community to the studs on this team. And the best part is, Steve, this team, the way it's trending, when they come to Vegas, they're going to be contending for pennants. They're going to be contending for the World Series if everything stays in line. I think they're going to be a playoff team next year.
Well, the A's are going to be in a market now that, not that the Bay Area hasn't demanded anything, but I think the Bay Area kind of gave up on them from a media standpoint because they knew the team was going to leave. We are looking forward to a competitive team. Like you said, we're spending $350 million plus the roads. We expect some things to be done. I will tell you this. My view, and I don't think the A's are going to like this, my view of the A's right now is they accelerated the plan last year. When Kurtz came up and was awesome, I think Nick Kurtz is a 41-20 guy with a 300 average. Like, I think he's going to be one of the best seven sluggers in all of baseball. That means that they can have a robust offseason. I think they need to be aggressive, or you're more of the mindset like, oh, let's be patient and wait 2.5 years.
I think, you know, it's a healthy balance because obviously pitching is the issue here. So I want to see them invest a lot more in the staff. But the thing is, I didn't like the Severino move. You're giving a lot of money to a guy who's probably not going to be part of that core and on that team. So I think you got to be careful because you also don't want to shell out all this dough and start taking away time on the field from guys who you want to see produce. We need to see if Zach Geloff is the guy who should be starting at second. You know, so it's kind of like you don't want to start crowding the dugout with a bunch of just high-priced free agents who are going to take away from this young core. I think we need to see Lawrence Butler do more. We need to see – I want to see Denzel Clark continuing to be Spider-Man in center field. Like, so I think you got to give these young guys their opportunity to shine and develop, but I think sprinkling in a little bit of money and free agency and acquiring some guys, I think, getting Leiter Jr., I like that move. They still got to do a few other things, but you just don't want to do too much and take away from the development of this young core. But listen, David Force, the GM, he knows what he's doing. The Athletics have always had a good front office, of course. We know Moneyball. We know Billy Bean. He took over for Dean Podesta, right? So Force went to Harvard. The guy played at Harvard. He's a smart guy. He's hit on these draft picks. The worst thing that happened this offseason to the A's, I'll tell your audience right now, is the fact that we got screwed over in the lottery again. That's the issue of the offseason. We had the fifth highest odds for the first overall pick, and we're ending up with number 8. So the good thing is forced hits on these first round picks, yep. But that is the big blemish on the offseason, and that's out of our control.
Mike Davis is with us, Fox 5. Fox 5 is heading up local coverage on the A's. The A's actually are going to be on the ground here in Vegas. They're going to play some games. They reverse course on the, hey, let's wait until the big bang when the stadium opens up. They're actually going to be out at LV Ballpark for a handful of games. I totally get you on not blocking position players. I do think they need an experienced second or third baseman or two in the mix while other guys work it out. Hernandez and Schumann and Geloff and Max Muncy, okay, but I think they need some more solid guys there. I do believe they can spend money on pitching. And I know while the Severino deal didn't work out perfectly, there are a bunch of Luis Severino types available in free agency this year that'll cost them probably max 2-year deals and somewhere between 12 and 20 mil per. I think they should go in. I sent you a long list, and I'll give the audience the list. And some of these guys are actually on, you know, they'll be like 4-year deals. At the top of the heap are guys like Mike King, Ranger Suarez, and Zach Gallen. But beyond that, Chris Bassitt, Giolito, Woodruff, Littell, Hauser, Corbin, Montgomery, all those guys, listen, they're not going to come in for $3 million a year, but you can get them on 2-year deals and get innings eaters, and this team actually can make a run to maybe surprise people and be above 500, especially if Kurtz is awesome, Jacob Wilson stays healthy, Rooker, Langoliers, Soderstrom all hit 25 bombs, and then guys like Colby Thomas and Denzel Clark really hit that next level. This can be a good team, but you got to get some pitching arms. You got to get some starters.
Let me give you another one. I mean, they traded away their best arm last year to the Padres, Mason Miller, the relief pitcher, the closer, for Leo DeVries, who, I mean, this prospect is ridiculous. The guy, the fact that, I mean, I don't know if the audience can grasp this, but what Force did in that trade, I mean, it's almost in Luka Doncic territory in terms of a steal. Highway robbery. So in a few years, okay, what's going to happen? I'm just going to tell you, the dude immediately is just, he's a killer. The dude has like a Kobe mentality on the diamond. So what's going to happen is we're getting to the point where the roster from a youth standpoint is starting to get too stacked. I mean, Soderstrom is tremendous too. So it's like, I don't know where all these people are going to move around. I don't know if Geloff is going to end up being the odd man out, and Wilson, you know, DeVries is going to have to go the second. I know he's a short guy. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how they're going to figure all the position players out. But the truth is, this core of Lawrence Butler, who's on a very team-friendly deal, Denzel Clark providing that defense, he keeps developing, Soderstrom, Rooker. I mean, Rooker's an all-star, you know, so it's like this roster is tremendous. And that, looking at your list, there's a few guys I love. I love Mike King. I love Suarez. I love Gallen. I think Luke Weaver. I mean, a lot of these guys, Corbin Montgomery, all these guys are good moves. So I think, yes, yeah, spend a little bit more money in free agency. I just think instead of giving the Severino deal and all that dough for one guy, maybe give that same amount of dough for two guys. You know, I think that's kind of the move, and build out the staff and try to start seeing who's going to be some of the members of this rotation and the bullpen who will be part of this team when they're competing. Because I do think if they build up the staff, they could be a playoff team next year. They really could be.
I, too, like the enthusiasm, Mike, for the young players in the A's system.
Go.
But I need to check you on something here. You just called a 19-year-old with 20 games at AA, Luka Doncic. Are you feeling okay? Should we send a medic? Or were you taking advantage of a little Vegas early happy hour there? I like Leo DeVries. I'm not saying he's not a great player, but I got to check in on you here.
Listen, I'm willing to put my reputation on the line. This guy is going to be good. Listen, what is Mason Miller doing for us today? Nothing. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, okay, Mason Miller is a great arm to have in the bullpen, close out a game. I mean, he's a stud. He's been with the team, developed. It's all great stuff. I'm just saying he doesn't provide anything for what we need today. So as we're thinking about the timing of how this core is going to come together, DeVries has a much higher likelihood of being an impact player than Mason Miller by the time that this team is truly competing for pennants and World Series. They're not competing for a World Series next year. They can make the playoffs. But I'm saying in Vegas, we know as locals, when a team is good from the get-go, like VGK, it makes a big difference. It makes a big difference when you're the aces, and from the get-go, boom, you're winning. So I think it's a very, very good sign that the A's have this core, this young core of studs who are going to be competing for World Series titles right from the start once they arrive in Vegas. And that's a big deal. And I wish the Raiders had that situation.
Mike Davis with us, Fox 5. He's heading out to NBA Cup. All right, give me the angle on NBA Cup, because Candy and I are going to discuss it later. What do you think the NBA would like to see in this? The New York team win, or the unicorn Wemby and the Spurs reach another level in terms of publicity and attention?
I'm going to give you an exclusive, Steve. I'm going to give you an exclusive, even though you shut down my producer and haven't been on Sin City Beat in months. But I'm the bigger man, and I'm coming on your show because I love you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we do love Cofield. He's a classic guest. We got to have him back. But I'm going to give you a little wrinkle here. I grew up with Jalen Brunson, so I'm a Knicks fan, and I love the Knicks and what they're doing. And I think this team is legit. I was a big Tibbs guy. I liked the way he coached. I liked the defensive prowess and mentality he brought to the team. But in today's NBA, you got to be able to score. You got to be able to put those points up. And the way Mike Brown has kind of opened up this offense, they look great. You know, on transition, they look great. Run and gun, spacing. It's really a special thing to witness. And I think the team is tremendous. I worry that Giannis could be, you know, like dangled in front of them and they could break up the team. Because I think the way this team is constructed with Ananobi, Karl Anthony Towns, Brunson, Hart. I love Josh Hart, man. If you love basketball, then you got to love Josh Hart. The team is solid. And, yeah, I think they're you never know against Wemby and the Spurs, of course, but I think they're going to win, and I think Brunson's going to be NBA Cup MVP.
Mike, we appreciate the time. Have fun at the NBA tonight, and let's get you on soon. We want to talk a lot more baseball moving forward, okay?
Okay. Make your way to Henderson, Steve. I'll call you an Uber.
I will. I'll be out there.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks, Mike. Okay. Mike Davis. All right. Okay. All right. UNLV football had me tied up on Mondays, Candy. What am I going to do? That's when they do the show. What can you do? Okay. We gotta build on some of that A's hype, we'll say, and excitement. I am excited. I'll tell you what I'm excited about is that I love the fact that the A's are going to play some games here on the ground. But I'm also excited that we get to cover a story for an organization that we have pitched over $500 million towards. And while they've just had people pissing and moaning in the Bay Area, knowing that basically the team was moving, this is a good baseball market. People know baseball here. We are demanding that this organization wins. And I'm telling you, last year, Nick Kurt's explosion pushed up the freaking timeline. They need to start being aggressive. They've got one of the best players in baseball going into his second year. They need to be good.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Sure, why not, right? Why not? Why not talk A's baseball? We're getting them here. The stadium is rising from the ground. Lots of us doubted that that was going to happen anytime soon. It's happening. I hope they have the stadium done by 2028 for that season. And since we have pitched public money, Candy, at the A's, and we were just talking about the A's with Fox 5's Mike Davis, and Fox 5 is kind of heading up the coverage locally with a partnership with the A's, we are going to ask for results. And you know what? We really don't have to ask for results, because after about 3 years, you'll know if your results are working, because people here are not going to games after the novelty wears off. Now, the NFL is the NFL. The Raiders are always going to have crowds there. I mean, at some point, I would think the average resale price of a Raiders ticket is going to go down if they're continuing to, you know, be a 3-4 win franchise. But the A's are going to have to be a winning franchise and at least have the optics that they're trying to win. And I thought last year was amazing in the second half. I'm not just talking about wins and losses, but Nick Kurtz coming on the scene with a bunch of other bangers, to me, accelerates the timeline. And when I was looking at the roster earlier, I'm like, okay, they got a lot of hitting options. They're a little questionable at second and third. But pitching is where, for the longest time, they've had 27 and 28-year-old prospects, and a lot of them haven't come through. You got to augment sometimes. And I'm willing to wait a little bit before I start freaking out, because it's early in the free agent period, and I think that middle class is kind of where you make your hay in baseball by getting guys who – you'll slip through that first wave, Candy. But they are going to have some activity in this offseason.
Scott Hatteberg, Jeremy Giambi, Chad Bradford. If you know the Moneyball days of the Oakland A's, these are names that mean something to you, because what the A's of Oakland did was they looked for players where they thought there was value that other franchises didn't see, that they could pay less for, that they could use to augment a homegrown core of guys like Soderstrom and Kurtz, and hopefully Luka Doncic DeVries by the time he makes it
that one.
Up
Leo,
to Vegas. I did.
Leo, baby!
I loved it. So, yeah, but you're absolutely right. And it's places like Cofield. I think you use the name that I think makes the most sense. It's a guy like Michael King. It's a guy like Michael King with a checkered injury history, who has not been able to put it together for long stretches. However, he's going to have a slightly depressed market because of that, and that's where you take your shots, right? You take your shots on a guy like that where there's still upside left. The guy, when it comes to stuff plus and all the other metrics, he spins the ball as well as anybody. He is a representation of what Luis Severino was thought to be a few years ago. Right. That's why I didn't like the Severino signing, because the ship had already sailed on what Severino could be. He just becomes an innings eater in Sacramento.
But they can't just stand pat. You know, you can't just rely on quadruple A guys to come up throughout the season. They've got to make an effort. And listen, they don't have to sell tickets right now. But they also owe it to their players too, because there are going to be guys. We mentioned some of that core, especially of the sluggers, who by the time they're here in Vegas, are gonna there's going to be decision time. Hey, are we extending these guys? Are we moving on? My guess is they're going to move on. But we want a competitive team here, and that's the only way you're going to draw people here, because Vegas fans, I admire Vegas fans. Like, if you don't win and the ticket doesn't have sizzle and it ain't worth the price, they ain't showing up, man.
You have to have been here as long as Cofield and I have been here, or much longer, to just look at UNLV basketball and what's happened there, right? When UNLV basketball, A, was the only game in town, and B, was really damn good year after year. I can remember when I first got here in the early 90s, I wanted to go to a game and couldn't get a ticket. I was a teenager trying to get a ticket to go to a game, and it was impossible to do. And that's not the case anymore, because there are other options in Vegas. They are more successful consistently. And you can even look at something like UNLV football and see where even a program that has been a longtime loser, like that program was, well, you put them in a better stadium that's more convenient for everybody to get to, you put a winner on the field, and you'll start to see it turn around. The A's are going to be up against that backdrop.
They also have to deal with the fact that they do have an optics issue around the rest of baseball, because they're in transition right now. This would be the flip side of Cofield, I'll go third person here, saying, hey, sign this pitcher and that pitcher. There are going to be players who are like, yeah, I don't want to play in Sacramento for 2 years. I'm not comfortable with that. I don't like that. You may have some pitchers say that. I don't think, boy, I would love for them to be in the market via trade for Ketel Marte, but I did notice that Marte, who's, you know, pretty consistent bat at second, probably an outfielder long term, actually has the Yankees on a no trade list, the Pirates, and the A's. I don't know how those three are tied together, but I think I know how the Pirates and the A's are tied together.
Oh, it sounds to me like a Sonny Gray no trade list, right? Like, mm-hmm. Like old Sonny doesn't want to be in New York, and he doesn't want to go to those teams. But it, seriously, the idea of do you lure free agents to Sacramento when Luis Severino, who was your big signing last year, was as loud as anyone in talking about he didn't like the heat. He didn't like the facilities. Yeah. He didn't like what they were doing around the team. Like, he basically was your test case where he went out there and signed and was like, ew, no, I don't like it here. And people echoed him. He's not by himself. Yeah. He's talking about the fact that you're in a AAA stadium, that not only did the A's not really invest to upgrade that AAA stadium, they refused to embrace the city. They refused to, like, do you want to go play in that environment for 2 years? So that's where the A's have to look and say, do we have to overpay the way they did with Severino, or do they have to overpay in terms of prospects in order to get somebody to go there? Well, that's the balance that you're trying to ride, right? That's what Mike Davis talked about in trying to field a now and later team.
Two things to sell: youth, 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 and Vegas, Vegas, Vegas.
Back here on this Tuesday, we check in with RJ Clifford, some MMA, and the Autumn Windbags podcast, which I can't even get out without laughing about with the way the Raiders season has gone. And I know you guys have a great attitude, even when things are down in the dumps. But let's start out with some MMA, and we have a crazy situation with a guy that you love, and I know you wanted to make a super fight with Ilia Topuria at the White House, and now is he out of the mix? What is going on here? He's pulled out. We were kind of joking last week on our show about the interim title fight at that weight class. Like, why the hell are they doing interim? And now we find out with Topuria, there's something going on.
So he is in the midst of a divorce, and there's custody going on with his kids, and there are allegations of behavior by him towards her that he says is unfounded, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he did a long post on his social media saying, hey, I'm going to, you know, step back for a while. I have to take care of this. I've been silent on these allegations, and now the truth will come out. Obviously, some PR firm and a lawyer got in there and did the verbiage. But it was the weirdest part to me was from the fighting side, he had already said this a week and a half ago. He's stepping aside. That's why they're doing an interim title fight between Paddy Pimblett and Justin Gaethje, January 24th. Ilya's stepping aside to take care of his family matters. So this latest announcement was kind of more legalities, public relations, than it was an actual fighting element where he's not going to be defending his title anytime soon. So whatever allegations were coming out, apparently it was loud enough for Ilya and his team to say it warrants a response. And that's what we got.
So now what happens in that weight class for, say, the next 3 months?
Well, like I said, January 24th, it's Paddy Pimblett versus Justin Gaethje for the title. That'll be the very first Paramount Plus event, the main event going down in Las Vegas, T-Mobile Arena. on January 24th. And then you've got one of the deepest weight classes in mixed martial arts kind of brewing. Armin Sarukian, who got a title shot in January. The drama there was he pulled out like morning of or late night of due to injury. There's disputed reports on exactly how injured he was. It certainly feels like the UFC thinks that he could have fought, but Armin chose not to. And so he's been kind of a whipping boy a little bit for Dana ever since, because he's clearly the number one contender. I mean, he has the resume of a number one contender, certainly better than Gaethje and Pimblett. But Pimblett and Gaethje will be a really, really fun fight. Obviously, two giant fan favorites. And they certainly make sense to headline the first Paramount Plus show.
So RJ Clifford's with us. You're a former fighter, so I know you're on the side of fighters. I am not a former anything, but I am very much pro-labor, pro-athlete. I've been consistent over the course of my career. I feel there's a danger here, and it's not the first time that I feel like Dana White has openly said it, or we've seen in actions where he's held it against a fighter for pulling out. How dangerous could this be where the organization has all the power? They're getting incredible depth now at 145, 155, 170. How dangerous is it for fighters to kind of feel like, hey, I might have a minor injury, but it's not going to, or it won't allow me if I fight to be 100%. So now I got to weigh, like, am I going to be buried and not make money, or do I have to go in there at 85% and not 100%? I mean, that's a dangerous game they're playing.
It is. And obviously with UFC fighters, they're not, there's not a union. They're not employees, right? They're contracted, they're contracted. And so that gives a couple different elements, right? So I remember when Ally Quinta, we found out after the fact that he was ineligible for three fights for performance bonuses. This was years and years and years ago. We're like, why? This makes no sense. Well, apparently he had destroyed a hotel he was in, upset a bunch of hotel employees. Like, he caused this giant scene. And if it was the NFL, I'd be like, okay, here's a fine. Here's a suspension. Here's all these multiple ways that we can punish you. The UFC doesn't really have that. It's either cut you or kind of do nothing. And so they found this gray area where, like, okay, here's, like, dutifully so, like, you deserve a punishment for representing the UFC and destroying property and ruining people's days, but we got to find this kind of gray area. So the UFC in this case, and if they look, whatever the truth is, right, did Armin Sarukian pull out for a very, very valid reason or not, I don't know. The UFC believes he did, and so this is their version of punishment. Like, they don't want to cut him because someone else will sign him, but he's still fighting. He just got a fight, looked absolutely fantastic in his last fight. He's still currently ranked number one in their rankings, even though it's Justin Gaethje and Paddy Pimblett at 4-5 fighting for the title. So the precedent is set, and it's, yeah, the UFC's like, look, if you think just cutting you is the only way to punish you, you're wrong. Like, we'll get creative if we have to.
Well, the other thing, and RJ Clifford's with us here on ESPN Las Vegas talking some mixed martial arts. The other thing is, once you're outside, to get back in is really difficult. And if you have a beef with management, like the Francis Ngannou thing is still going on. He obviously would be a great candidate in the heavyweight division, great candidate for super fights. He said, hey, I'm available for the White House card. Dana White about 2 months ago said, hey, listen, Francis and I, hey, the big fella got physical with me. Then we get a correction on the story. Well, that's not exactly what I meant. He didn't get physical, but this is one of those beefs. And we can talk about Dana White beefs over the years. You know, Randy Couture, and obviously Tito Ortiz was one of the biggest ever, the Diaz brothers. Why does this one seem so personal and so beyond resolving?
I will say this. The Dana White has come back with a lot of guys if he feels like he can make money with them. Right. And that's the business approach, right? Like, that's, and honestly, that's his job as president of the UFC is, look, if the trouble is worth it, I will make it worth it. John Jones, he's jumped through Dana White has jumped through every possible hoop for John Jones.
Yeah.
Moved events across state lines, let him come back after multiple arrests and drug failures. He's been stripped four times of his title. No champion has ever been stripped more than once. John Jones has been stripped four times. And he might still headline the White House. I know Dana White's saying no, it might still happen, right? So if you are valuable to the UFC, so the other things about Francis Ngannou, and there's other rumors of things that he's done, but he's not a guy, he's the bad example of this, because he's not a guy to cry about for. He made so much money boxing. He's made so much money in the PFL. It's like, he's the winner of this situation. He's what you aspire to be. If you're like having a beef with the UFC, you want to make some money somewhere else. Francis Ngannou is what you want to emulate. So, yeah, obviously with Francis Ngannou in the UFC and him, Tom Aspinall, or him and John Jones, or him and Alex Pereira at heavyweight or something like that, the possibilities are endless. I don't believe though that Francis thinks he comes back to the UFC. I don't think he wants to either. I think he's in a much better place, just kind of cherry picking fights outside the UFC.
So from a schedule standpoint, we're kind of in an incredible moment in UFC history. They're making so much money. They've got a new deal coming up. They're rising. I mean, a lot of people think they're going down. I don't believe that. They're in a 5-week hiatus right now. I was just looking back at the schedule because, you know, you and I have covered UFC and MMA for a long time. You have to go back to like 2005 when they had a card on, I think it was UFC 56 with Matt Hughes and Joe Riggs were on it. I mean, this is in the Wayback Machine. They fought November 19th, and then they didn't come back until January 16th. Right now, they've got 5 weeks off. That doesn't mean they're not readying for next year because they have a lot to prep for. This Paramount deal is massive, and from what I've heard, you know, we know people around town who work at USC. This White House card is like in the makings for months and months and months and months. It's very complicated.
Yeah, it's a weekly thing for the UFC to do this White House card. It's just logistically such a nightmare, but they feel it's going to be worth it. But yeah, with the move to Paramount CBS, originally there was plans of the first event being the 17th of January, and there was supposed to be an event this weekend, so there'll only be like a three-week hiatus, but the UFC really wanted to make a giant splash, and they're like, look, let's do T-Mobile, let's make it big time, let's make it a big deal. And they're doing back-to-back numbered events, which is logistically a nightmare for the UFC. They're doing January 24th and then February 1st in Australia, Sydney, Australia. So back-to-back numbered events, which I don't think they've ever done on opposite sides of the planet. Oh, yeah, I think there's a power slap in Saudi Arabia that same weekend, too. So just like, we think as fans, it's, oh, well, this fight's so big and it just makes sense to do. Like, there's a machine that's constantly churning and it needs a lot of oil and it needs time to kind of recalibrate and go. So I know fight wise, fans aren't getting fights for 5 weeks, but I tell you this much, the UFC employees aren't getting time off. There's a lot to do.
RJ Clifford's with us. We have you on video today here on ESPN Las Vegas.
Yay.
Are you just laying on the beach in Southern California because you have a burn? I know you just moved to a new house. That there was an accident at the house. What happened?
So I'm a sauna guy now. I have a sauna in the house. Just got done doing it. Feel like $1 million, but this pasty English skin of mine, all it takes is a slight change in the barometer, temperature wise, or any other tiny thing, and you see kind of. That's why I blame that for why my record is so terrible. Because I'm one of those guys. If I get one punch, you can see the knuckles of.
Hey, you look
punch.
Terrible.
I just don't. I'm like George St. Pierre, right? Him and I are the same way. One punch, and we just wear it. Even though we're winning fights, we just look bad.
Did you buy a house with a sauna, or did you invest in a sauna?
Invested in one.
You did.
I brought a sauna guy. Yeah. With how much I drink, I'm like, okay, I got to replenish. I got to give the liver some help.
So that's a good line. Sauna. I'll leave it at that. Is the drinking actually increasing with the Raiders season? You do the Autumn Windbags podcast. This is unbelievable. I don't think we need to deep dive on what was about the fifth game this season where we walked away and we're like, there can't be a worse game than that this season, but it just happened with the Eagles. Mm-hmm. You had some great stuff on your podcast. You're unbelievable with the teases. So I'm going to address a couple of things.
Okay.
First of all, rookies expose coaching staff.
So what have we been hearing from Pete Carroll all season long? We're trying to win now. We're putting the best guys out there, and that's why we're starting Kappa and Putnam and Caillou Blue Kelly and these atrocious, terrible one-year rental free agents that the Raiders brought in to try to win now. The Raiders are now starting to play some rookies, and they played a lot more last week than they did this week. But it wasn't a change in policy. It wasn't Pete Carroll seeing the light and saying, oh, let's start playing for next season and give these rookies either a chance to develop or find out maybe they're not good and it's time to move on. It was injuries that forced all these players to play. And they played fantastic. Caleb Rogers played far better than all the guards that were playing ahead of him. Darian Porter is so much better than Caillou Blue Kelly. Eichenberg got some reps finally this last Sunday against the Eagles, and they're, you know, the Eagles were, that's a bad example because they didn't play all that. All these guys kind of got beat up a little bit, but they're playing better than the starters ahead of them. These are drafted rookies that you should be finding out what they've got, developing, and they outplayed all these veterans that Pete Carroll is saying, nope, we got to play them, because it's like, it is truly out of spite that Pete Carroll didn't play these young guys, because I can't think of another logical reason. They're all better, and you want to develop them, and you want to move forward, and they're on the team for 3 to 4 years, and they're better than the one-year rentals that you brought in. What is going on here?
Did Pete Carroll leak quarterback decision to save face?
So this, how often? So it was kind of murky earlier in the week of whether Geno Smith or Kenny Pickett was going to start for the Raiders against the Eagles. How often on like a Tuesday do you hear a report that, okay, the starting quarterback is not going to play, it's going to be the backup?
Never.
Never.
They try to hold out. Steve.
Yep. You wanted to like give the defensive coordinator fits. Who's going to start? Who do we prepare for? Who do we get ready for? Like, you want to confuse the opposition. But somebody leaked that it was going to be Kenny Pickett. And we know the relationship between Geno Smith and Pete Carroll. They're obviously very close. Pete brought him in and paid him all this money and wanted him to be his guy because they were together in Seattle. And I don't think Pete Carroll wanted to say, I'm benching Geno Smith because he's so terrible. I think he wanted to kind of let everyone save face and say, oh, it leaked out that Geno's too hurt and it's going to be Kenny Pickett. That seemed a far more logical case than some journalist was rallying sources or behind some dumpster getting paperwork out and like figured out that Kenny Pickett's going to be the starter against the Eagles.
RJ Clifford, ESPN Las Vegas. You were on this last week. I saw that Mike Florio stole your take on this one about the blameless Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Somehow TB12 as an owner, and we got reports during the season, they tried to, you know, sweep it under the carpet real quickly about him talking to coaches. Somehow TB12 has escaped any sort of blame here. Why do you think that is? Florio went as far as saying, listen, the next coach who comes in has got to ask the question, who is running the organization? Is Tom running the organization or not? You can't have Tom Brady running the organization and doing TV, can you?
I think he is, whether you can or can't, that's what he's doing. Look, if the Raiders in an alternate universe, right? If the Raiders were 12-2 instead of 2-12 and Geno's flying high and Ashton Gentry's off, rookie of the year. And this defense is just outplaying its skill set. And who'd be getting all the love? It would be Tom Brady. The national media, the local media, like, man, Tom Brady took over. He's just as good of an owner as he was a player. This guy knows ball. He's getting the best out of everybody. And of course, you know, Pete Carroll be getting a lot of love. And there, when things are going well, a lot of people get credit. But Tom Brady would be on that side of getting a ton of credit. I'm not hearing anybody blame him for how bad this season is. Like, this is one of the worst Raiders teams in my 42 years that I have ever seen. And that's saying a lot, considering some of those mid-2000s teams, those early Derek Carr years, the Art Shell coached year randomly. Like, there's been some really bad teams. And, I mean, how many completely inept games have we gotten out of this franchise this season? And for some reason, Tom Brady, despite the fact that we know that he liked the Geno Smith hire, he wanted the Chip Kelly hire, like, he's made some, we know, he's reportedly at least, that he's made some pretty big decisions for this team. And yet, all the blame is going on just the line, Pete Carroll, Chip Kelly, nothing for Tom. And it's, let's spread the blame around evenly, all right? There's plenty to go around. We don't need anyone to hoard it. Let's spread it around evenly.
Autumn Windbags is approaching 340 episodes. You started about 5 years ago. I saw your list of things that have happened to you personally and Mr. Wonderful. The record's not good. Can you run down this? You have it in front of you. You're 31-54. I'll just do it. You're not. They are. The Raiders are 31-54 since you guys started the podcast. Five head coaches, nine different starting quarterbacks. And are you guys getting gray hairs?
We are. Oh, well, they kind of disappeared. Like, we were looking at the old photo that we took for, like, for the first one, like, 2020. It's like, no beards, full heads of hair, and then, like, the top of the hair is disappearing. Like, just the hair is just moving on the body, you know? The body weight's moving, too, from shoulders to the gut.
Welcome to old age.
Yeah, just aging. Just aging like dogs watching these Raiders play. I take some responsibility for how bad we've been playing.
Wait until the rumored coaching list come out if Pete Carroll is gone. Because right now, the hottest candidates around the NFL are almost exclusively defensive guys and defensive coordinators. And that is going to send Raider Nation and probably you guys over the edge. What are they going to do? A lot of the hot candidates offensively went off the board the last 2 years.
And we have to be a better opportunity than the other teams that need head coaches, right? Like, if you're a quality head coach, do you know, New York, Jackson Dart, some, like, my favorite rookie class was that New York class. I mean, they just awesome group of guys and a quarterback. That's the most important part. So the Raiders have some serious decisions to make moving forward, right? Because there's a good chance the Raiders get the number one overall pick, right? Do you go quarterback? Do you trade down because you need so many things to be filled? And are you trying to attract a head coach that maybe you could only attract them if you have a quarterback? Do you want a head coach that's like, look, I'm down for a 3-year rebuild, but I need guarantees out of Mark Davis, because every coach that comes to the Raiders lasts a year, maybe a year and a half, and then they're gone. The Raiders are just uphill in every conceivable way to try to get a head coach. It's just like, there's not a single thing the Raiders have going for them other than no state tax, right? Like, that's it. So this is going to take, again, Tom Brady has been luckily kind of blameless in all this. We need him to pull something here. Like, we got a Ben Johnson interview purely because Tom Brady asked. Raiders didn't get Ben Johnson, but at least he went through the door. This is where Tom Brady needs to flex big time.
And there's
no other solution.
Yeah, these last 3 weeks. No, they need Tom Brady from the pitch standpoint. These last 3 weeks are going to be wild, which is ridiculous to say with a team with this record. But if they win one of these freaking games, oh, my God.
The toilet bowl with the Giants in 2 weeks, right? Giants.
The pressure is on.
Well, this is – so Giants, Titans, Raiders are all kind of vying for it. And I believe the Raiders kind of I think there's no way, even if the Raiders lose out and the Titans lose out, to get the number one, because the Raiders won't have the tiebreaker on the Titans because the Raiders beat the Titans. But if there's a three-way tie, they have the benefit because of another tiebreaker. But the Raiders play the Giants, and so the Giants will, if they, you know, the Giants, let's say, beat the Raiders, now it's a two-way thing between the Titans, and they have the tiebreaker. It's kind of a mess, but like, the Raiders don't control their own destiny to number one. And I hate tanking. I don't like I'm still old school. Like, I want to watch a football team and enjoy it and root for them to win. But that number one pick right now, man, it's as valuable as anything in football.
I'll tell you what, you know who I really like if he's still in that practice squad? I think Cam Miller's got to get a chance here. You got to get him out there to start some of these games down the stretch. So let's go, baby. You spent a 6-round pick. Get him out there. Come on now.
What about O'Connell? You don't want to see O'Connell out there slinging it?
AOC in no way should see the field. If it's not Cam Miller last couple of games, then I want direct snap to running backs. I want Wildcat.
Isn't that such an opposite way that Pete Carroll's behaved, though? It's like literally the only two quarterbacks on the roster he didn't have involvement with. Like, he traded a 5th-round pick for a backup Kenny Pickett and gave $25 million to Geno Smith. And he's made it very clear this season. It's like, oh, I want my sons to coach. I want my buddies to play. And the veterans I picked up, they get the playing time, and that's it. Like, if he went Cam Miller, I'd be like, what? Did he have a stroke? Like, who is this guy?
Someone else took over the organization. All right, RJ, have a wonderful weekend. I think we're going to have you on next week. You're off here for 5 weeks. Hopefully you can carve out like 10 minutes next week for us.
Nothing but time, baby. Nothing but time. That's why I'd be extra red. Just nothing but sauna and talking fun football with you, Cofield.
There he is, RJ Clifford, right here on ESPN Las Vegas. Coming up in 20 minutes, we're going to go behind the counter. We'll get the take on the Raiders game on the line in that one. Another bloated line. Ray Cleaver from William Hill will join us.